In this series, explaining the significance of doing devotion to Radha Krishna, especially in Kaliyuga, in the last few speeches, I've been clearing up some of the doubts that people commonly have about God. And one of the things we were wondering was, if we are all Ansh of Bhagwan, all souls are Ansh of Bhagwan, how is it that we're under the bondage of Maya? So I explained in my last speech that all souls are indeed Ansh of Bhagwan. They receive their life from Bhagwan, but they are not direct Ansh of Bhagwan's internal power, Antaranga Shakti, which is called Swarup Shakti or Para Shakti or Yogamaya Shakti. We are Ansh of his Jeev Shakti. Tatasthatvancha Ubhaya Kotava Praveshat. Shat Sandarbh. In other words, souls do not belong to Maya because Maya is lifeless, Jada Shakti. So we're not lifeless, we're not Jada. But we do not belong to Swarup Shakti either. Because if we were Ansh of Swarup Shakti, God's personal power, then that Purnavikas of Swarup Shakti's powers would be seen within us. In other words, we would be Sarvagya, Sarva Shaktiman. We would be all blissful, all knowing, all powerful, just like God is. Esha Atma Parita Papama Vijaro Vimrityur Vishoko Vijighatso Pipasa Satyakama Satya Sankalpa Chandogyopanishad tells eight qualities which God has. If we were Ansh of that Swarup Shakti, we would also be free from thirst, free from hunger, free from disease, free from death, free from suffering, free from sin. And we would be satyakam, satyasankalp. Whatever we desire would happen, whatever we think would happen. So we don't have this in our personality because we are not Ansh of Swarup Shakti. I explained to you that being Ansh of Bhagwan does not mean being his tukara. We're not a piece broken off from God. Shakti rupatve naivan shatvam vyanjayati. Also from Shat Sandarbh. Jeev Goswami explains that souls are called Ansh of God because they are part of his power, not because they're a piece of him. Jeeva Shakti Vishishtasyaiva Tava Jeevonshah Natu Shuddhasya. Shat Sandarbh. This shloka is saying, souls are not Vishuddh Ansh of Bhagwan. I'll explain what that is in a minute. We're Ansh of Bhagwan, but actually, more specifically, we're Ansh of Bhagwan's Jeev Shakti. So that's why we're called Tatast. We're not part of Maya, we're not part of Swarup Shakti, we're part of his Jeev Shakti. These are the three main powers. Vishnu Shakti para prokta kshetragya khya tatha para avidya karma sangyanya tritiya shakti rishyate. Vishnu Puran. Maya Shakti, Para Shakti and Jeev Shakti. These are the three main powers of God. So if we don't belong to Maya, we don't belong to that Para Shakti, we belong to Jeev Shakti. So Jeev Shakti includes all the uncountable souls in existence. And we are one of those souls, so we are Ansh of Jeev Shakti, which is God's power. So, in short, we say we're Ansh of Bhagwan, but we're not Vishuddh Ansh. There are two kinds of anch. Swanch and vibhinnanch. Swanch means swa-anch, one's own self. And vibhinna, separate. What is swanch of Bhagwan compared to vibhinnanch? We are vibhinnanch. What is swanch? For instance, in Vedas it says, Sa eka eveshwaraha narayano khila brahmandadhi pati rekon shaha tasya shaktayas tvanekadha ahladini sandhini jnane cha kriyadya bahuvidha shaktaya tasvahladini variyasi paramantaranga bhuta radha yeyam radha yascha krishna. Radhika Upanishad says that there is one single supreme God, and his one ansh is the Lord of uncountable Brahmand. What's a Brahmand? A Brahmand is one planetary system, like a solar system, plus Swarg and Narak affiliated with that solar system. Everywhere there's an earth planet with souls residing, there's also a Swarg and a Narak. So that one unit, Mrityulok, Swarg and Narak, that makes one Brahmand. There are uncountable such Brahmand in the universe. Sankhya chet rajasamasti navishvanam kadachana Brahma Vishnu Shivadinam tatha sankhya navidyate. Devi Bhagavat Puran. Even if someone could count every grain of sand on our earth planet, they still wouldn't be able to count the number of Brahmand in this universe, because the universe is endless and there are unlimited number of Brahmand. Because the number of souls is infinite, so if God is going to accommodate all of those souls and give them a birth somewhere, how are they all going to fit on one limited earth planet? It's impossible. So our scriptures describe that in this endless universe, there are infinite number of Brahmand. And in each Brahmand, there is one Brahma, one Vishnu, and one Shiva. So just like the number of Brahmand is unlimited, the number of Brahmas is unlimited, Vishnus is unlimited, Shivas is unlimited. And they are all ansh of Mahanarayan, Mahavishnu, of the divine world. That Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, they set up like a branch office here in the material world. In each Brahmand, they set up their branch office. And they are ansh of Supreme Almighty God, Mahavishnu, Mahanarayan. But this Veda mantra that I just recited for you says, Narayana akhila brahmand adhipatihi ekaha anshaha. That Narayan, who is the adhipati, the ruler of akhila, unlimited Brahmand, he is ek ansh of who? Yeyam radha yashchi krishna. That came at the end. That one ish is Shri Krishna. His one ansh is that Mahanarayan, who is governing all these uncountable Brahmans, and whose ansh is the Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma of each individual Brahmand. So the Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma of each Brahmand is ansh of Krishna's ansh. Krishna's ansh is Mahanarayan. His ansh is Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar. Yasyaika nishvasita kalamathavalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanatha Vishnur mahansa iha yasya kalavishesho Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Brahma Sanghita. It's a prayer by Brahma to Sri Krishna when he was trying to understand, how can I create the universe? How can I create the Brahman? Brahma doesn't create the universe. He creates one Brahman. Mahanarayan creates the whole universe. So Brahma didn't know, how do I create? He prayed to Krishna. And in that prayer, he says, O Krishna, Mahavishnu, who is the creator of the whole entire universe, he is Kala Visheshaha. Kala means a power of. It's another way of saying Ansh. So that Mahavishnu is but an Ansh of your personality.
Srijami Tanni Uktoham Haro Harati Tadvashaha.
In the Bhagavatam, Brahma also says, I create with the power given to me by Shri Krishna. Shankar destroys with the power given to him by Shri Krishna. And Vishnu protects and maintains the Brahmand with the power given to him by Shri Krishna. So, this is why the Bhagavatam says, Avatara hya sankheya Hare Sattva Nidher Dvija. There are uncountable avatar of Bhagwan, one single Bhagwan. Like rivulets emerging from a huge lake. So all the different avatar emerge from one single supreme divine personality of God. And who is that?
Ete chancha kalapun sahasa krishnastu bhagavan swayam.
You heard the word ansh again.
Ete chancha kala.
Again, ansh and kala. So all those other avatar, they are ansh and kala of krishnastu bhagavan swayam. Swayam Bhagwan Shri Krishna. Baki sab Bhagwan hai. Bhagwan Shankar, Bhagwan Vishnu. Sab Bhagwan hai. Lekin Swayam Bhagwan. Avatari Shri Krishna hai.
Baki sab avatar hai.
Avatar meaning their dissensions of Shri Krishna. Lekin avatar kaun leta hai? Who is the one taking avatar? That is Shri Krishna. So he is called Avatari. Or Swayam Bhagwan. And everyone else is Bhagwan. Of course, they are not someone else. Which is why they are called Swa-ansh. Swanch. As opposed to us who are Vibhinnanch. We have our own separate personality. We are not God. But every Swanch is Bhagwan. It's not some other personality. It's just Bhagwan when he's revealing less of his power outwardly. We can understand through a beautiful shloka of the Bhagavatam. In this, Vedavyasji tells that Bhagwan represents himself in three main ways. If you understand this, you'll understand the whole picture.
Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajgyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate.
One single advaya jnana tatva, which means the supreme power. Parat par tatva, absolute supreme power. So we know that's Shri Krishna. He represents himself as Bhagwan, Paramatma and Brahm. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti shabdyate. So those who know God know him by these three names. What is the meaning of this? Bhagavan is the form in which Shri Krishna reveals all of his power. And when he's doing that, he is Bhagwan Shri Krishna. Swayam Bhagwan. You see him like this. Radha Krishna. If he's revealing a partial amount of his power, some of his power, not all of his power, then he is called Paramatma. So those are his different avatar, like Vishnu, Shiva, Durga. These are all forms of Almighty God, which are being referred to as Paramatma. So they are avatar of Shri Krishna, or they are his ansh, they are his kala. So they are called his swanch, swa-ansh. It's him, it's Shri Krishna, nobody else. But he's appearing like that because he's not revealing his full power. He's revealing part of his shakti. Some of his shakti is concealed. And as Brahm, most of his shakti is not revealed. It's avyakt. So Brahm is also called alpavyakt-shaktik-brahm. Alp means a little bit. Little bit of his shakti is manifested as Brahm. So that Brahm is actually formless. Why? Because the shakti is not manifested. Just to maintain his satta, his very existence, that much shakti is being manifested and the rest is dormant. So he has no form, no name, no gunas. That's why he's called nirguna. Nirakar, no form, nirgun, no qualities or virtues that could be explained, nirvishesh, no characteristics of any kind that could be described. This is Brahm. But he's the same Shri Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishthaham, Gita. Brahm is established in me. It's just my other form when I'm not revealing hardly any of my power. Purusham Brahma Yonim. Ved also says that Brahm comes from the personal form of God, Shri Krishna. So all the forms of God are absolutely one. However, there is a difference in how much shakti is revealed. So when the full power is revealed, he's Purnatam Purushottam Brahm Shri Krishna, or Swayam Bhagwan. Purnatam, because the full shakti is revealed. Ram is also considered Swayam Bhagwan. He is Maryada Purushottam Brahm. Same Krishna, slightly reserved in his behavior. Not a full revelation of the Prema Shakti. That's the only difference. Then Prema Shakti fully concealed. So only the Aishwarya Shakti is revealed. He's Paramatma, Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, etc. And all the Shakti, almost all the Shakti concealed, he's formless God, Nirakar Brahm. But it's all Shri Krishna. So all those other forms are considered to be his ansh. But we have to make the distinction, they are swanch, because they are him. And they are ansh of Swarup Shakti. And they are governors of Swarup Shakti. And they are all Sarva Shaktiman, Sarvagya, Anandamaya, Anandakarup. They are God. But we are Vibhinnanch. So we are not Ansh of Swarup Shakti, otherwise we would be like all the various avatar. We are Ansh of Jeev Shakti. So there's no vikas of that Swarup Shakti within us. You might say, how is it possible? We are God's Shakti, we are also within Him. How is that Swarup Shakti not shown in us? How are we not all-knowing, all-blissful? So you can think of it like this. It's just an analogy, but it helps to understand. Let's say there's a person, a judge, and that judge is merciful by nature, kind, forgiving. But when the judge is ruling on a case, if someone has broken the law, he has to hand out punishment, appropriate punishment. Depending on the laws of that state, he may even hand out a death sentence. Yet, his nature is what? His nature is kind, generous, forgiving, merciful. Yet, he's sentencing someone to death. In other words, that part of his personality is being concealed. And he's just revealing another part of his personality. So in the same way, God reveals some parts of his personality, conceals other parts. That's how Brahm, formless God, None of Krishna's personality is revealed in formless God. And we souls, we also don't receive the effect of that Swarup Shakti. So we are Vibhinna Anch. We're separate from Him. Like the sun and the rays of the sun, the Kiran. They're Anch of the sun, right? Yet they're outside of the sun. Something like that. We're Anch of Bhagwan, but we're not part of His Swarup Shakti, so we're called Tatast. We're not Jada like Maya, so we're in between. Tatastha Shakti. And because of all of this, I explained to you that we are under Maya because we are this Anch of this Tatast Shakti. We're not part of Swarup Shakti. So Maya has the ability to keep us under bondage. If we were a part of Swarup Shakti, we could never come under the bondage of Maya. Vilajjamanaya yasya sthatumikcha pathe muya Bhagavatam. Maya cannot go in front of God. Jaha surya taha nahi mayar adhikar. Just like darkness cannot come in front of the sun, Maya cannot go in front of God. So that means anyone who has that Swarup Shakti, Maya cannot go in front of you. So if we were part of Swarup Shakti, even if we were Anch of Bhagwan, we would still be His Swanch, and Maya could not come anywhere near us. But since we're part of His Jeev Shakti, and each soul is infinitesimal, so as I explained yesterday, just like metal has an Anch of Prakash in it, metal is shiny, right? So it has an Anch of light, you could say, within it. Anch of Prakash. The sun is like Mahaprakash. So darkness can't affect the sun, but darkness can surround a little insignificant piece of metal, which glows as long as it's got sunlight shining on it. But if it goes away from the sun and it's alone with the darkness overcomes it. So Krishna bhuli sei jiva anadi bahirmukh ataeva tare maya kare sansara dukh deya sansara dukh. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ji says, since all the souls are eternally bahirmukh, they're turned away from God, it's like that piece of metal being away from the sun. So since we're turned away from God, so Maya has us under its bondage. Just like the darkness overcomes that shiny piece of metal if it's away from the sun. So the only way for us to overcome this bondage of Maya is by turning back towards God. Jushtam yada pashyatyanya misha masya mahimana miti vita shokaha. Veda says, the moment a soul turns towards God, becomes sanmukh, he meets God face to face, and Maya is gone forever. All of his suffering is gone forever. So this is our situation. God never put us under Maya. We've been turned away from Him since eternity, thus Maya is having its way with us since eternity. If we just simply turn towards God, all the problems go away. Maya goes away. And we receive. Then we become Swarup Shakti Yukt. We still don't become Anch of Swarup Shakti. We're still the same identity. We're still Vibhinna Anch. We're still Anch of Jeev Shakti. However, we become Swarup Shakti Yukt. Bhagwan gives us that Swarup Shakti. We receive it in our antahkaran. So, Maya goes away. We get unlimited anand, unlimited gyan, eternal life in the divine world. But even in that state, we are still a soul who is Ansh of Jeev Shakti. We never become Swanch. We are what we are and we will always remain. The only thing that changes is, are we under Maya or are we beyond Maya? So we can become Maya Teet. We will never become Maya Dhish. Maya Dhish is Bhagwan. He rules Maya. He also rules Swarup Shakti. We can become beyond Maya and we can receive that Swarup Shakti, but we will be governed by that Swarup Shakti. We will never become the governors of Swarup Shakti. That is only Bhagwan and all of his Swanch. And we have all the relationships with God. Dva Suparna Sayuja Sakhaya Samanam Vriksham Parikhasva Jate Tayoranya Pipalam Svadvatya Nashnan Nanyo Abhichakashiti. Shvetashvatra Upanishad. The same mantra is in Mundaka Upanishad. This one mantra tells of four types of relationship, sambandh, that we have with Bhagwan Shri Krishna. First of all, sadeshya. Like two roommates living in the same room, this mantra tells that soul and God are like two birds living in the same tree. This is the tree, the body. So we're in here. The soul and God is in there. That's sadeshya sambandh. Like we're sharing a room with God. We're both living in here. Then you have sajatya sambandh. We're both birds. We're both of the same kind. He's chetan, we're chetan. He's maha chetan. And we are anu. But both are chetan. We're both alike because we're both alive. So, this is sajatya sambandh. Then we also have sayujya sambandh. Because not only do we both live side by side in here, also, ya atmani tishthati. Bhagwan lives within our soul. Yasyedam shariram. Ved says, Bhagwan, where is he? He's inside your soul. He permeates your soul. That's like his house. You live inside your physical body, and for him, your soul is like his body, because he's inside that. So, in fact, you're both occupying the very same space. How could you get any closer than that? Sayujya sambandh. The fourth one, sakhya sambandh. He's our friend, well-wisher. More than that, he's our everything. Eko deva divyo narayano mata pita bhrata nivasa sharanam suhrid gati. He's our everything, Subala Upanishad. He's our mother, father, brother. We reside within him. He is our ultimate goal. He is our well-wisher. He is our only refuge. Tvameva mata cha pita tvameva. Tvameva bandhuscha sakha tvameva. Tvameva vidya dravinam tvameva. Tvameva sarvam mama deva deva. You are my everything. So we have this deep eternal relationship with God, which exceeds and supersedes every relationship that you could have on this earth planet, because no matter how good a relationship it is, it would, for one thing, only be temporary. We don't have that problem with Krishna. Wherever we've gone and wherever we will go, he's in here. He's always got to come with us. He, poor guy, doesn't even have a choice. If we go and we're born as a worm crawling in the ground, even if Krishna thinks, Mujhe nahi jana hai udhar. Jana padega. He has to come with us. He's right there inside our heart, inside our soul. So that relationship is eternal. It can never be broken. And it's perfect because He's perfect. He doesn't demand or need anything from us. He has no personal desire from us. He only wants to grace us with His divine knowledge and His divine anand. So it's a perfect eternal relationship. And He's waiting to grace us. But in order for Him to grace us, we have to surrender to Him. We have to become sanmukh. But becoming sanmukh is not a physical thing. Atmanagvam rathinam vidhi shariragvam rathamevatu. Rathamevatu buddhim tu sarathim vidhi manah pragrahamevacha. Indriyani hayanahur vishayans teshu gocharan. Atmendriya mano yuktam bhokte tyahur manishinah. Vigyana sarathiryastu manah pragrahamevacha. Pragrahavan narah. Sodhvana paramapnoti tad vishno paramam padam. Kathopanishad says that we have this rath. The rath is our physical body. And that rath is for going somewhere. Who controls where the rath goes? The sarathi, the driver of the chariot. But there's also a passenger on the chariot. So there's both a driver and a passenger. The passenger, who is actually the owner of the chariot, that's us, Atma. The soul is the owner of the chariot, the owner of the body, right? We reside in the body and we own this body temporarily. Who's driving? Buddhi. Our intellect decides where we go, what we do, what we say. And there's one more element involved. There's a rassi, lagam. The reins to control the chariot, because there's horses pulling the chariot. So the reins are your man. Man is your emotional mind. Buddhi is your intellectual mind. So buddhi has a hold of man, and whichever way it pulls man, the horses are going to go. And the horses are your senses. So the senses are pulling this rath, which is being driven by your intellect. Now, which way will the intellect take it? Well, the road that it's following are all the objects of the senses of this world. Our goal is to reach home. Where is home? God. That's home. That's what our soul wants. But if we are vimukh from Bhagwan, and we're driving our chariot with our back to Him, and we're going full speed, what are we doing? We're getting farther and farther from Him. We've turned our back and we're driving our chariot full speed. And the faster we go, the farther we're getting from Him. So this body is given to us for a reason, to reach God. We can use it to do bhakti, become surrendered to Bhagwan, and know Him in this life. But if we don't have the correct knowledge, or we don't apply that knowledge, then we don't go in that direction. We simply get more and more attached in this world, which means we're running farther and farther away from God. So we have to turn the chariot around. And that's not just a physical thing. It means our mind. Remember, buddhi is in control. Buddhi has to desire God. Buddhi has to understand the depth of our relationship with God and the fact that we'll only receive perfect happiness when we reach Him. So we have to turn towards God. But turning towards God means your mind turns towards Him. How to make the mind turn towards Him? More knowledge. Understand more deeply, what is your relationship with God? Why should you desire God? Explain it to me. That's what your mind wants. You tell me, why should I desire God? What's wrong with this world? Why shouldn't I go on enjoying this world? mind asks such questions, so we have to answer such questions so that our mind understands what could we attain by reaching God and what will we attain if we keep trying to simply attain more pleasures in this world. Our mind has to understand that. If not, it will just continue chasing after worldly things. It will never become sanmukh to God, so we'll never receive His grace, and we'll never know Him and attain Him. So this means the next topic that we have to take up is sansar ka swaroop. Sansar ka swaroop means, what is the nature of the world? We talked already about the origin of the world, how Srishti happens, how is Bhagwan involved in Srishti. But we who are living in this world and experiencing this world, both the disappointments and sufferings and the pleasures of this world, we need to understand the true nature of those pleasures and those disappointments. Why do we get pleasure from the world? Why do we get disappointment from the world? Why, even when we're enjoying the world, do we always feel like we want more? There's a science behind all of this, and it's explained in our Vedas. And there are contradictory situations also. People say, if you look back at the history of divine saints of India, some have said the world is fake. Some have said the world is real. And you can find quotations to back up both. There are philosophies in the world. There are some who say, this world is enough. Just get more of the world and you'll attain perfect happiness. And there are others who say, who needs this world? All we need is God. And the other side is saying, who needs God? All we need is this world. In other words, the materialists say, if you have enough of the world, you don't need God. And the spiritualists say, I have God, so I don't need anything from this world. There are contradictions and big questions like this that we have to clear up in order to move forward. If someone were to go into the scriptures and study all of that on their own, Shruti Puran Bahu Kahe Upai. Tulsidas ji says, our scriptures tell so many different things. Chutana Adhik Adhik Arujhai. You'll become more tied up, like you enter into a jungle and get lost forever. You'll become so confused if you yourself go and try to read our Sanskrit scriptures to answer these questions. I'll tell you a story from 1955. There is a great convention organized, a Sant Sammelan. There were 72 preeminent scholars of India who were called to one place in Chitrakoot, the place of Bhagwan Ram, for this 16-day Sammelan. And the organizer of this conference, Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj, who was at the time 32 years old, he was not scheduled to speak at all during this conference. He was the organizer and swagatadhyaksh. He was looking after everyone, making sure all the invitees were taken care of. He did not put himself on the schedule to speak even one time, other than to just welcome people. And there were 72 of the greatest scholars of India, like Jagadgurus, Shankaracharya, Nimbarkacharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. They all established Math, and people even to this day are taking on that title of Jagadguru, who are sitting on the throne that was left behind by those first four Jagadgurus. So there were Jagadgurus invited. There were Mandaleshwars invited, Mahamandaleshwars invited, greatest scholars of India. And there were some questions put forth that, you know, it wasn't just like, okay, let's all get together and just speak on whatever we want. There were questions put forth that everyone in their speech should try to answer these important questions for the benefit of the public. Number one, there appear to be contradictions in the description of the various forms of God in our scriptures. Why are there so many forms of God? How are they interrelated? There seem to be contradictions in the descriptions between saying, does God have a form or is God formless? And there's also the description of all the different paths. How are they related? Which one is correct? That was question number one. Question number two. The past Jagat Gurus all established theories like Advaitvad of Shankaracharya, Dvaitadvaitvad of Nimbarkacharya, Vishishtadvaitvad of Ramanujacharya, Dvaitvad of Madhvacharya, Vallabhacharya also had Vishuddhadvaitvad, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji's disciple Jeev Goswami had Achintya Bheda Bhedavad. So you have all these different explanations of the Upanishads, Gita, Brahma Sutra, or Prasthantrayi. That also creates a big confusion. So please reconcile those contradictory views. That was question number two. Question number three, please describe about the importance of bhakti and how is bhakti described in our six darshan shastras, Purva Mimansa, Nyay Darshan, Vaisheshik Darshan, Sankhya, Yog, and Brahma Sutra. And the fourth question, there are some of our Sanskrit scriptures that only tell about worldly pleasures and how to attain more of them, for instance, Purva Mimansa. So why do such scriptures exist and what is their value for an ordinary soul? These were the four main topics put forth by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj himself. When he invited everybody, he said, these are the topics that the public, this is going to be promoted in the public. There will be leaflets handed out. Everyone's going to expect you to speak on these topics and try to reconcile and make some sense out of all of this. So in this 16-day conference, for the first several days, the speakers, these eminent scholars, they actually didn't know how to answer these questions. No one was speaking on the assigned topics. Everyone was getting up and talking whatever they normally talk about. No one was trying to reconcile and answer these questions. And the public was starting to get a little restless that, hey, what's going on? We came hoping to hear the answers to these questions. So some of those great scholars, they got together and they had a meeting amongst themselves and they said, this Kripaluji Maharaj, he's only 32 years old and these are all elderly, great, respected scholars. They're saying this young Kripaluji Maharaj invited us here and put these impossible topics before us. Why doesn't he speak on the topic? So they went to him and they challenged him. You answer these questions. Let us speak on whatever we want. So for the final 9 days of that conference, Sri Maharaji spoke for 3 hours every day. And in those 9 days, he answered all those questions and reconciled all of those topics. So this was the first time, can you imagine? Until then, he had only led satsangs, given kirtan, led chanting, that kind of thing. He had never given a public speech, ever. And just on the spot, they challenged him, and he just stepped up and answered all those questions, giving 3-hour speeches every day. So people were amazed that someone at that age could have so much knowledge, quoting from all the different scriptures. So there was one very important scholar there, Giridhar Sharma. He was the vice president of the Kashi Vidwat Parishad. At that time, Kashi Vidwat Parishad was the most important body of scholars in India. As you know, Kashi, Varanasi, it's the center of scriptural learning, Sanskrit learning in India, and has been for thousands of years. So this Kashi Vidwat Parishad was a body of more than 500 scholars, the greatest scholars of India. And this Giridhar Sharma was the vice president of Kashi Vidwat Parishad. He was there and he heard Sri Maharaji, Kripaluji Maharaj, speak. So he went back after the conference and he was raving about Kripaluji Maharaj, Kripaluji Maharaj, and all the other members of Kashi Vidwat Parishad. Well, there were a few handful who had also heard Sri Maharaji speak at this conference, and they were all speaking so highly of him. The other scholars were kind of doubtful that a 32-year-old person could have that much knowledge to reconcile these questions that we never considered reconciling, because to us it's impossible. Must be an exaggeration. So next year when Kripaluji Maharaj organized a similar convention in Kanpur, they secretly, the Kashi Vidwat Parishad, they secretly sent their general secretary, Raj Narayan Shukla Shat Shastri, also one of the very top scholars of India of that time, the most respected. So he went secretly without announcing that he was coming, and he just showed up. And the first day when Sri Maharaji was getting ready to speak, he sat and he took out a notebook and pen. He sat like this as Sri Maharaji was getting ready to speak. So Kripaluji Maharaj knew, meri galtiyan nikalne ko tayar baithe. He's sitting there ready to, if he disagrees with anything or he thinks I make any mistake, he's going to note it down. And then when he speaks, he'll say, no, he said this wrong, he said this wrong. He'll say it in public in front of everybody. So that whole speech Sri Maharaji gave, his pen never moved. Raj Narayan Shastri's pen never moved. And the next, he was supposed to speak after Sri Maharaji that day. He politely declined. He said, please, I'll speak tomorrow. So the next day, he asked, can I please speak before you? So Sri Maharaji said, of course, sure. So he went up and his whole speech was only about Kripaluji Maharaj, praising him. Actually, that it's been recorded and transcribed, and it's in Kripaluji Maharaj's book, Prem Ras Siddhant, in the introduction to that. Part of what Raj Narayan Shat Shastri said is written there, both in Hindi and the English translation. It's very interesting to see that he was saying, we scholars of Kashi Vidwat Parishad, we hold ourselves very highly, but we have to bow down before such a knowledgeable person, who obviously exceeds all of our knowledge. So he went back to Kashi Vidwat Parishad again. This is 1956, and he was praising Sri Maharaji even more. So then all the members of Kashi Vidwat Parishad, they decided, let's invite him here. Meaning they all said, we want to see for ourselves. All these people keep coming back and praising him. It can't be true. Invite him here. We want to see for ourselves. Their idea was, we'll invite him, he'll give a speech, we'll challenge him, we'll debate with him. So they invited Sri Maharaji and he came to Kashi Vidwat Parishad in early January 1957. So at that time he was 35 years old. Not even 35, 34 years old. And he gave a series of Sanskrit lectures, because he wasn't talking to the general public, he was talking to Sanskrit scholars. So he spoke in Sanskrit for 9 days. And the very first day, everybody came expecting that, okay, I'm going to get a chance to debate and discuss, because I'm sure there will be some things that I'll disagree with. And after the very first day, Kripaluji Maharaj asked, okay, you know, I'm done my speech and it's tradition. Now, if any of you have anything you want to debate with me, please. Nobody said a word. They all remained quiet. And the next day, the hall filled up really fast, and those elderly scholars who don't ever go to listen to anyone else talk, people come to listen to them talk, they were there bright and early getting the front row seats. And this went on for more than a week. And after that week, these scholars were so impressed, they had a meeting and they said, "This is unprecedented that someone has come amidst all the main scholars." And normally, you see, in the past, when a saint became a Jagadguru, like when Shankaracharya became Jagadguru, he traveled around India and debated with all the main scholars in all the various localities, one-on-one, one-on-two. Never has it happened that all the scholars gathered at one place. So you had one individual on one side, 500 or 600 scholars on the other side, and all of them accepted defeat. Meaning, they had that meeting, they said, if none of us is willing to debate against him, we have to accept him as Jagadguru. It's our tradition. When someone gets the acceptance of all the scholars of the whole of India, then they're honored as Jagadguru. It only happened 4 times previously in Kaliyug. In 5,000 years, there had been 4 original Jagadgurus. So on January 14th, 1957, those scholars of the Vidwat Parishat of Kashi, they requested Kripaluji Maharaj to accept the title of Jagadguru. And not just Jagadguru, but they called him Jagadguru Uttam. Jagadguru Uttam was his title. Because, and they also gave another title, Nikhila Darshan Samanvayacharya. He reconciled all the previous theories, the apparent contradictions in all the scriptures and the apparent contradictions of all the past Jagadgurus and other saints. He showed how there's no contradiction. He made perfect sense of it. He was the first one ever to do that. So they gave him the title of Jagadguru Tam and Nikhila Darshan Samanvayacharya. And in this way, Shri Kripaluji Maharaj became the 5th original Jagadguru in the last 5,000 years. So based on his explanation of these Sanskrit scriptures and the theories and philosophies of the past great Acharyas, I'm going to explain to you and resolve for you these questions about, is the world real? Is it fake? Do we need the world or do we only need God? What is the nature of this world? What's the nature of worldly happiness and suffering? All of these questions, based on what I've been fortunate enough to learn from Jagadguru Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, I'll resolve those going forward from the next speech. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.